Hey, good afternoon, everyone. We've got the pastors assembled around the mic again. Where'd you find this article? What is it?
This is from the BBC, so across the pond. They're partners with CBS, but the title is Glenn Youngkin, Win for Republican in Virginia Governor Vote.
And there's a picture of him on the stage with his family celebrating the victory.
Yep. So just this week, he's been elected as the governor-elect in the state of Virginia. The ballot has been widely seen as a referendum on Joe Biden's presidency, and defeat will unnerve the Democrats. He won by 10 points in Virginia in the presidential election just a year ago, but rising inflation, a slow economic recovery, a deadlock legislative agenda, and the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan have hit his popularity. In a speech to cheering supporters, Mr. Youngkin promised to get to work straight away to transform the state. "We will work in real time, in real people time, not government time," the Republican declared. Is it McAuliffe? Anyone heard how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. McAuliffe served as governor from 2014 to 2018. His opinion poll lead vanished in recent weeks. And in a statement after his loss, he said that he had come up short, but insisted the state remained on a path towards inclusion, openness, and tolerance for all. The state's current Democratic governor, Ralph Northam, was unable to stand for re-election as Virginia does not allow governors to serve consecutive terms in office. In more potential good news for Virginia Republicans, their candidate, former U.S. Marine Winsome Sears, is tipped to become the first black female lieutenant governor of the state, which was the former seat of a pro-slavery confederacy during the American Civil War. The Republican candidate for Virginia Attorney General, Cuban-American Jason Mayorkas, was also leading that vote count, and Republicans seem to be closing in on control of the state's House of Delegates. In other election news, a couple things that kind of pit this against some other things, that in New Jersey, the Republican challenger, Jack Cittarelli, is neck and neck with Democratic Governor Phil Murphy.
All right, not anymore, though, just for everyone that is current. That decision has been made.
Murphy won, correct?
Yes. Yeah. The Democrat won by a margin tighter than you can imagine.
And then amid surging crime, Minneapolis voters rejected a proposal to replace the city's police department with a new Department of Public Safety more than a year after the murder of George Floyd by an officer. And as expected, Democrat Eric Adams won New York City's mayoral election to replace his party colleague Bill de Blasio. Republican challenger Curtis Silva was involved in an argument at his polling station after turning up to vote with a pet cat and told his furry friend Gizmo could not enter. And Pittsburgh picked its first black mayor, Democrat Ed Gainey. So in Boston, Asian-American candidate Michelle Wu was elected mayor, becoming the first woman to become a person of color to take the post. One of my sons asked me the other night if boys can be elected mayor of Boston, the Democrat told supporters. They have been and they will again someday, but not tonight. So how did a Republican win in Virginia? Mr. Youngkin is the first member of his party elected to statewide office in Virginia since 2009. The political newcomer focused during the bitterly fought election on crime and the economy, as well as how schools handle race, gender, and mask mandates. Mr. McAuliffe campaigned on other cultural issues, such as abortion rights and voting reform. But the Democrats' critics hammered him for saying during a debate, "I don't think parents should be telling the schools what they should teach." According to exit polls by the BBC's U.S. partner CBS, education and the school... I think I lost a section on that one. We'll pick up. So at a news conference earlier, Let me see if I can just pull this up real quick, because that'll help in clarity.
Yeah, it's so difficult when you send it to the printer, because it's everything is geared nowadays for watching it on your phone or reading it on your phone, that it doesn't just naturally print up correctly. Did anybody besides myself pay attention to this the other night, or did you guys just go to bed as normal?
I watched.
You watched some? Okay.
I stayed up for a while, and when they were still going.
Yeah, going strong. Yeah,
back and forth and back and forth. I went to bed. And.
But when you look at the state of Virginia, man, it is one red state. I mean, it is a red state. Blue a little bit in the Fairfax, blue down in Richmond, blue down in Newport News, but the rest is just a blanket of red.
Alexandria is usually blue.
Yeah.
Right up in D.C.
That's Fairfax, that whole area.
Fallout from D.C.
Yep. Did you find it, Brian?
I did, yep. All right, so according to exit polls by the BBC's U.S. partner CBS, education and the school curriculum were top issues for slightly more than half of all voters. So I'll read that again since it cut off on our page, because it's one of the talking points I think we should discuss, is that education and the school curriculum were top issues for slightly more, so just over 50% of the voters. So at a news conference earlier on Tuesday, Mr. Biden predicted his party would win the first major election since he took office 10 months ago. But he acknowledged the off year is always unpredictable. The Democratic president's approval rating has fallen to 43%, according to an opinion poll by Real Clear Politics. The McAuliffe campaign tried to liken the challenger to former President Donald Trump, who remains unpopular in Virginia. But Mr. Youngkin, a mild-mannered private equity tycoon, sought to appeal to moderates by keeping Mr. Trump at arm's length while tapping into the former president's supporters in the state. His balancing act may offer a template for Republicans seeking to win back suburban moderate voters who were turned off by Mr. Trump's firebrand style of politics. The race could shape party messaging and battle plans for the next year's midterm election, when the Democrats will defend their wafer-thin majorities in Congress and the 2024 White House election. Mr. Trump thanked his supporters for coming out in force and voting for Glenn Youngkin, saying the MAGA movement,
Make America Great Again,
was bigger and stronger than ever before. And then it kind of tags on this other article by a different author, but it's the Trump playbook without Trump. At a restaurant, the restaurant was crowded with people angling for the best place to watch election returns on big screens with American flags everywhere. They had gathered hoping to see Glenn Youngkin win. Over the past several months, he has charted a course for conservatives. He talks frequently about race relations and has denounced the teachings of critical race theory. He ran on a law and order platform and opposed mask mandates, and his messaging echoed the kind that Mr. Trump uses. But Mr. Youngkin kept his distance from the former president. In this way, Mr. Youngkin has appealed to voters who like Mr. Trump's positions but are uneasy about the man himself. His win is likely to guide other conservatives in their campaigns for congressional midterms. So those are our article and tag from the BBC.
All right, we're not supposed to have silence on the mic.
Yeah.
Right.
I can edit that out.
That's a rule against a good podcast.
One of the things that kind of sparked my interest in bringing the story in, because that was the talk of the last presidential election, is whether a state went red or blue. And there was a whole lot of, I think, at least maybe it's because I'm just older now, but it sure seemed like there was, in my voting life, that there was more mudslinging occurring in the last election than there had been recently. But then for a state, Virginia, and it's no secret to anyone who understands geography, that the seat of our government is the District of Columbia, but just connected to it is Virginia and Maryland. So, if you're not D.C. proper, you'll hop over into one of those outside of the district and go into one of those neighboring states, which traditionally have been very, very distinctive based upon the color in which they lean in an election being blue. But for it to go and flip red this time was interesting. But then when I saw this article on what the issues were, it seems like it's going, at least this is my perspective on it, it seems like we're going less based upon I'm a Democrat, I vote Democratic, or we're, you know, this is the way we want our direction to go, and more based upon issue-based voting, and that's guiding families, or their constituents, I should say.
Well, I think that this election, as well as the one in New Jersey, just reminds us just how divided we are as a nation. And it is literally right down the middle. Because if you watched the other night in New Jersey, you thought that the Republican was going to be the winner. And then you woke up the next morning to, only to find out that the Democrat, and they were virtually side by side, and then there was another 24 hours of counting votes. And then finally, the Democrat inched them out by only a few votes.
Yeah, they found more votes.
So, once again, we're at a situation where the nation is incredibly divided. But like we were talking about, Jack and I were talking, if you look at the state of Virginia with one of those maps that shows the counties, it's a red state. And we're further realizing that the difference between the cities and the rural is only getting locked tighter and tighter into the differences. If you live in the country, you are Republican. If you live in a city, you're a Democrat. I mean, that sounds too black and white to say it like that, but are there exceptions? And it doesn't appear to be.
Not when looking at the population as a whole.
But I mean, North Carolina, I would say, is real similar as well.
Sure, yeah.
In that regard. You know, Charlotte, Raleigh, the Raleigh-Durham area, the Triangle.
Asheville, where the
colleges. Asheville, right. You know, they're all
as blue gets.
Right. And it's, you know, they all, you know, then when you go to vote, it's real, you know, they kind of balance out everybody out in the suburbia.
I thought you were going to say the sticks. That's
suburbia.
Well, it reinforces our divisions, and it's problematic because if I live in a city, I'm surrounded by only Democrats. If I live in the country, I'm surrounded by only Republicans. So I have no idea why you, Mike, are a Democrat, and you have no idea why I'm a Republican, and what are the things that are important to you, and what, because we don't even interact. We don't sit in the same coffee shops. We don't share the same, food truck. We don't have conversations with people that are opposed. And then you go up into Washington, D.C., and the Republicans and the Democrats fight, and now we're even having the Democrats fighting amongst themselves right now. You're talking about mudslinging, it's at an epic proportion because now progressive Democrats are attacking moderate Democrats, and moderate Democrats are...
You got Bernie Sanders, you know, lighting up the president over how much money he wants to spend?
The lack of how much money he wants to spend. Bernie Sanders wants to take it through the roof. And then you've got Joe Manchin over there in West Virginia who's taking all kinds of heat because he's trying to keep, you know, bring it down a little bit. So now he's describing himself as a West Virginia Democrat and somehow a way of...
Is that like a Texas thing?
Is that what we're clarifying?
Yeah. Well, Manchin decided that if the party keeps going towards the more radical Democratic Party, he talked about leaving the party. But he would not become a Republican, he would become an independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that really doesn't matter because if he still caucuses with the Democrats...
Which is what he said he would do.
Right, so that he hasn't done anything then.
Right.
He hasn't accomplished anything.
He's distanced himself from Omar, AOC, and some of the others.
Sure, and they don't even know each other up there, which is so hard to conceive of, but there's 535 of them. And so you think of like our own congregation, you know, 535 adults, maybe a little bit less. All of our adults in our congregation don't know each other. So you can easily see a scenario in which you could have representatives and senators who don't really know each other. They might pass in the hallways, know what they look like, but he doesn't know why AOC stands for what she stands for and why he stands for what he stands. You know, they're totally different. Joe's absolutely committed to getting back to energy independence. That's an inconceivable thought to AOC and that whole progressive. That's how divided we are on numerous issues.
one thing we're not mentioning, it came up and they said education. But really and truthfully, it's the Loudoun County School Board and the Loudoun County issues that are going on. You know, they got the transgender bathrooms in which rape has occurred and no reporting was done to parents. I mean, there was reporting done to the police, to the parties involved, but the parents were unaware of these criminal activities happening on campuses. They're the ones who called the parents terrorists, domestic terrorists, for wanting to know what the curriculum was and what the curriculum is being taught. They're the ones who said parents have no business in knowing what the curriculum is. It's the school's decision. It's not the parents' decision. Stay out of it. And that didn't sit well with a lot of voters.
Especially in light of the fact that we've grown up under this mentality. Mike, you were in public school system, right, as a teacher.
Yes, sir.
Your school board is elected by parents, in essence, local people,
yep,
who are your representatives to ensure that the schools are doing what the parents of that community want done. And so then for the school board to separate itself from the parents and act as though it's an entity unto itself with, you know, powers that are sovereign, flies in the face of everything that the last 50 years of, you know, maybe longer than 50 years of running public education in America. That's why we have regional differences between school systems. Gary Botz, his boy John, was up in West Virginia, and he taught Bible in the school system. He taught Bible in the public school system. Now, he wasn't paid by the public school system. A group of churches paid his salary as like a missionary, and then he went into the public school system and taught Bible in the public school system. That's in our lifetime. That's not like years ago. That's our lifetime. But that's West Virginia. That would have never happened in Massachusetts. That would have never happened in New York City. That would have never, and probably not happening today anymore. Who knows?
No, it's, I have family in West Virginia. And Pastor, you having spent several years in West Virginia, my aunt is in, they live just outside of Kaiser, West Virginia. Like, it's a little tiny vet community that sits between a couple mountains. Tiny little area. And my cousins are dealing with the fact that in their little school, in which everyone makes the football team that tries out, that's how small of a public school this is dealing with the whole transgender bathroom thing.
Wow. Wow.
It's just, you know, so it's, I mean, it's going all the way into, this is a, it's a rural community. I mean, my cousin is a senior, and he's in trade school to be a welder. I mean, this is the backbone of America, like, community. Like, this is where you would expect, you know, these individuals to be a little more, I don't want to say sheltered, but preserved from the liberal agenda coming in, and it's in their public school.
Well, Jack, we have an uptick in our enrollment because of the parents recognizing what's happening in public schools and desiring not to be in there, right?
Yeah, the biggest things that we saw was the to move away from the mask mandates. Of course, we got trapped into that one with the abatement from the county. But early when the school year started, you know, Cumberland County schools masking, private schools optional. That had a big influence. The fact that we actually operated 5 days a week had a big influence. Another influence was the fear of CRT creeping into the public school system. And we received a lot of families of ethnicity that were fleeing CRT because they did not want their children to be taught to be victims. Because they did not want to their children to ever think of themselves as victims. You know, we even had pushback just recently, even from one of our curriculum publishers, because it used colloquialism, and it's a pre-Civil War story about the Underground Railroad. It's a very positive story, a good telling of the Underground Railroad, the great work that it did to move slaves out of the South to the North where they could be free. So it's a, like I said, it's a very, they love the story. The complaint was, is that it used colloquial speech, and they didn't want their children being exposed to slave speeches, the words that were used by the family, because they have never been slaves, so they should never be taught to speak like slaves. And we don't want that stereotype placed upon them, and we don't want them confused by it.
Mm-hmm.
So they caught us in enough time that we, it was a concerned parent, really engaged parent, caught us ahead of time before the story took place in the classroom. We got it to the teacher. The teacher said, okay, I'll read it out loud and read it in correct grammar. So we still get the content of the story. The kids don't have to be engaged in the actual reading of it. And the test was rewritten by the teacher with correct grammar for excerpts to do reading content reinforcement. And this summer, the teacher said she's going to take the story and rewrite it completely and make it an excerpt to be able to be handed out when they come to that story in the future years. And, you know, it's just a good relationship that we've built with this family to be able to work through that process. But that's a lot of stuff that they're leaving the public schools over. Not to mention the behavior issues and, you know, the confusion pieces and stuff like that.
And, you know, you don't even know what to think with regard to the CRT issue, because I listen to NPR, National Public Radio, and they're dogmatic about the fact that CRT isn't even taught in the Virginia school system. So, like, whenever someone suggests the idea, then they'll immediately correct and say, well, that's just an allegation. We all know it's not taught. And yet there are 50% of the voters who voted for Youngkin think that it is in there and it is a serious problem. And so what does it mean that CRT is being taught in a school system? In other words, like full-blown CRT, a suggestion that racism is systemic, does that make it CRT? Is a discussion about racism making it CRT? You know, in other words, there's no quantifiable, objective measurement to determine, yes, that is CRT or isn't it CRT?
Yeah, and CRT, like I said before in different podcasts, has really three major components. I can't remember all three of them off the top of my head, but two of them is one, and this is the huge one, that race is the framework that everything should be viewed by. In other words, that no matter what we do, we see race. And therefore, there's an intrinsic bias programmed in from the historic systemic society in which we lived. The other piece, though, that is, and I think it's a very valuable piece, and I think those of us around the table, if we looked at just that piece separated from the other pieces, is the idea that historic narrative drives thought. In other words, generational storytelling creates the preconditional thoughts that exist for each ethnicity. And I think that's one that we can legitimately say, yes, we can see that happening. Therefore, we need to engage in these conversations. Okay, you tell me about Tulsa and the destruction of, what was it, Black Wall Street?
Mm-hmm.
And let's hear that story from your perspective. Then I'm going to talk to you about the struggles that the Irish had as slaves in New York City. And then we're going to talk about the commonality of, you know, the struggles that each ethnicity has had to find the common ground for healing, not the common ground to remain victims and blame each other. And that's where the issue really breaks down and it loses its validity.
Yeah, it really seems like we're having a hard time being objective with regard to this, because I remember when I saw that 60 Minutes special on Black Wall Street, maybe 2 years ago, and I have a four-year degree in American history, and I never had heard about...
I mean, I'm sitting here right now, and I'm like, when I get done with the podcast, I'm going to look this up.
Oh, yeah, you're going...
You absolutely do.
Yeah.
Because you're a biology major.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, but you have a four-year degree. Yeah. You have a four-year degree. And you're a teacher, which means you would have taken some American history as a requirement. Mm-hmm. I took a lot of American history and a lot of history, but you would have taken some. Mm-hmm. So when I found out that I had taken multiple American history courses and had never heard about this incredible atrocity, and it is a race massacre, and there's no other way...
No, there's no other way to describe it.
Right. That's what it is. And it didn't happen pre-Civil War. It happened post-Civil War. It happened in the 20th century. And then to recognize that I'd never heard about it, I was just... So we do need to acknowledge that there are definite weaknesses to our curriculum, that is to say, the curriculum that schools buy, and it's incumbent upon teachers to do more than just teach the curriculum. It's necessary that they analyze it with the brain that God has given them to determine, is there a bias here? And the bias goes both directions. Let's acknowledge the bias goes both directions, and that it's critical that we take the bias and go either way, that we push back on whatever bias we see. And Youngkin won this governorship based on his ability to capture what a kind of a grass movement's idea was, and then he just capitalized on it. I was watching CNN, one of the commentators rightly communicated that this was not in his platform. This was added to his platform when the thing occurred in the school district that you just mentioned, Jack. And suddenly, and then, it, as some of you may recall, the Democratic governor said that the parents don't have any business in that. And then when he said that, Youngkin just, that was the turning point of the contest. Yeah. And then he snatched that and made it, that was the stump speech. From that point on, that every local meeting was that right there. And it'll just turn out that he's just another politician who probably won't make much difference in the school system. Because let's face it, how can a governor really impact a school system? You know, how can how many counties are in North Carolina? How in the world could you get to all those counties? Between you and all those counties is a school board. Between those school boards and the teachers is an administrative system. Between those administrators are principals. And finally, you get to the teachers. So the concept...
And you got a teachers union in there somewhere.
Sure you do, right. So the idea that he's really going to make a difference, it's kind of absurd, you know. But it shows that there's still a large portion of Americans who are not ready for the progressive agenda to be jammed down their throats. They don't want their kids going to schools where transgenders can walk into a bathroom, and you think, just think about it. One more thought, I'll be done. The punks that I went to school with, and I say that because I got beat up in school as a small kid, so they were punks. I didn't play football or anything, so I was a small kid. Okay? You're not
talking. Mike was the one beating you up.
Right. Well, you're a big guy, Brian. You've been a big guy since fifth grade, so...
A little before that.
Yeah, so... My point in saying all that was, I could easily see the punks that I go to school with, that went to school, going, I'll put a skirt on in order to get in the girls' bathroom. I'll do that in a minute in order to get to see something that I want to see. You know? So, we're so oblivious. I mean, just, like, indefensible oblivious to the idea that all high school students are right and proper. So if he is in the girls' bathroom, it's because he has pure motives and a gender dysphoria, so therefore he needs to be in that bathroom. No, he wants to see what that looks like on the other side of that wall. He is a pervert who has a sexual drive out of control at the age of 14, 15, 16, 17. And there used to be a group of men and parents that were like, no, you don't get to go in the girls' bathroom. That's why it has the word girls on it. You're a boy, go in that bathroom. Can you imagine, John, that we're at a state in our nation now where we're struggling with what your gender is and what bathroom we get to use?
Yeah, so another two things that happened, and I can't remember if this was in Virginia or if it was some other place, but there was a lot of fights happening. And somebody put out, you know, about parent involvement, parents should be in the schools, parents should know what's going on. A group of dads got together and they went to the principal, volunteered, and now they're basically volunteer resource officers, unarmed, anything else. Just a mere presence that actual fathers of the students are in the hallways. There has not been an act of violence on campus in weeks.
You know, yes. Jack, you should take a moment and see if you can Google that, because that's really worth that level of parental involvement.
The other one is this Loudoun County, a 14-year-old girl actually gave up and spoke to the, and she said, I don't understand why I'm 14 and I can understand what a man is and what a woman is, and you cannot.
Wow.
And you know, it's things like that that have been a part of this whole process. Another was an exit poll last night. A person was coming out, and I'll stop, turn over the mic, and look that up. They were asking him, you know, sensing and doing the reporting and all that. And he basically said, and he speaks Spanish, I've always been a Democrat and everything else. I believed in them, but they have destroyed our economy. They've destroyed our nation, and this presidential administration has made me a Republican.
And that's what he said.
Yes. Oh, you found it?
Yeah.
Yes, Brian.
Yep.
So dad's work to change tone of high school after massive fights and nearly 24 arrests. Shreveport, Louisiana. A group of dads has come together in an effort to change the tone of the children's school campus. According to KSLA, Dads on Duty formed after massive fights broke out at Southwood High School in Louisiana and nearly 24 arrests were made. This dad start just before 8 a.m. assisting students as they enter the campus and giving them words of encouragement. They walk the halls and make sure students are getting to class on time and look their best. We just kind of walk around and give good energy and speak to the kids. Michael R. Lafitte, the second, said. What started as a group of five, Dads on Duty, has grown by the dozens, and they continue to recruit more members. You know, it makes a difference when kids know there are parents on campus. We just made the initiative to come and just walk around, Zachary Johnson said. The dads say that they are not a security force, just fathers hoping to change the narrative on campus. They said the program was received well by the students. And I guess that's it, because all it is ads and clickbait from there.
But awesome, right? I mean, yeah. Awesome. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
You know, last week, actually, I think it was this week, I just wrote, I had some students that were playing their instruments too loudly. They weren't being, bad or anything. They were just, I'm trying to get them into controlling. You know, these are beginning band students, and they sound terrible, partly because they just play too loud. And so, you know, I just wrote on the board, playing too loud is like yelling at your mom. Okay? And I had the number of students that I had that told me, you know, fifth graders told me, because I had different classes come in, man, if I yelled at my mom, I'd get a spanking. My bottom would be red. And I was just, like, strangely encouraged that. And now I go to a pretty conservative school,
mm-hmm.
because it costs a lot of money to get in that school, and most of them would probably line up Republican. Most of them are going to be people who play by the rules, except for when they're trying to hide their money offshore. I hope they don't listen. Just joking. But most, exactly. No, but you know, most hardworking people who have wealth, who have made wise decisions. Sacrificed a lot, played by the rules, and so, you know, organization and good study skills are important to these parents. They're engaged. All of the things that, you know, most people want parents to be when it comes to the students you're teaching. And it was just interesting to me because even at our school, that the whole gender thing has come into it. And it's just, what's so frustrating is I just know a lot of these people. And, like, I would say, if I just had to anecdotally put it, it's, you know, 95% of these people just disagree wholeheartedly with
right.
that. And it's just a small percentage of folks that are driving the narrative and making these changes in the fact, well, now you have to have training on these issues for your teachers, for this public persona that you can not avoid, you know, getting in the newspaper as the school who doesn't have balance, you know,
a fair treatment of LGBTQ and all this stuff. And it's just, on the one hand, it's encouraging because you feel like, you know, the stories of, you know, total move towards liberalism are greatly over reported. However, it's always still the same group of people who are speaking the loudest and jumping up and down, which is seems to be really a minority that is making these things a hassle for almost everybody else. And it just goes back to the days when you think, you know, the silent majority, and it's just, when are we going to wake up and just start speaking on the mind and what we believe? It's just, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It was encouraging at the same time, kind of discouraging, because we still have to deal with what I believe is a very small percentage of people making a lot of noise.
Funny you say that, Jack, because I was struggling with my Bible students and getting them to do an assignment the way it needs to be done. And I was really thinking about making them get their mom and dad's signature on the assignment just to try to get parental involvement. When we do that at the elementary school, Jack, they send them a folder and the parent has to sign it. And then in high school, it's like so many of the parents are just handed off anymore.
I kind of figured out it was like, well, we went back to the old packets.
Well, so that you could see your kids' work, you know. I want them to see some of this work, you know. Like, have parent-teacher conference and hang their papers on the wall, and then the parent be utterly embarrassed that that's his kid's chicken scratch that looks like he's in fourth grade. We've come full circle because the parents in Virginia elected this Republican because they are concerned with the education their kids receiving, and yet there's a whole another segment of parents who are not concerned, and they just send the kids to school, and whatever they teach them is whatever they teach them. And it's kind of more indicative of the divide in our nation. And you can't help but to wonder, how long will this divide continue, and what will its end state be? As some states become more conservative, as people move in that direction, other states continue to become more liberal as people move in that direction. Are we ever going to come back together in any sense?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's humorous, but it's not humorous. I don't know if you've ever, John, you probably have seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Curse of the Black Pearl, when it first opens up. And Jack Sparrow is riding this like little dinghy boat that has a mast on it, and it's sinking as he goes into the harbor. And by the time it gets down to the bottom and it finally sets on the bottom, he's standing on the very, very top sphere of the mast and just steps off onto the dock from there. And it said, leftists leaving their own state and coming to your state. And basically, there's Jack Sparrow stepping off the mast from the destruction that they've left where they're at. And, you know, you got to think about Texas.
Yeah, that's happening. What you're describing is happening.
And I don't know if I was Texas, if I'd be so much worried about my southern border as I would be my western border.
Yes.
As California comes.
Because it is absolutely coming your way.
I mentioned that to Mike when we were, you know, finding an article, like, what's going to happen to California with the policies in place, and then all these extremely wealthy people who have the resources to do so can pick up and move their Tesla factory to another state, and it leaves behind more of the rural entities.
Well, that was an unveiled Elon Musk reference.
Well, there's been no shortage of news articles that, you know, he left the state over, you know, some of the stuff. And there's plenty of celebrities and things. I mean, that's why we mentioned Texas, is because we see...
Well, the Daily Wire left, Ben Shapiro, and those guys.
Yeah, we see this massive exodus of wealthy people who can afford to do so. But the average working class, I don't think, for the most part, is going to, or feels like they could reasonably do so, of just, let me sell my house, because people are going to come in, you know, in our housing market, like, we see that, where we could, you know, our houses will flip like crazy. But I don't think California's having the same kind of issue where everyone's flocking to go move there.
No.
So eventually it's going to get to some sort of a tipping point.
You could actually see, if you live long enough, you could see California go the other direction, because who's left?
Right. Your farmers, you know, the wine country up in the northern part of the state, the homeless who didn't have a way out.
Look at Georgia. Georgia turned blue on the last election.
Well, North Carolina, too.
Right.
I mean, we're more blue than red.
Yep.
And that was, I think, you know, I think the liberals may have made a concerted effort over the years of bringing, you know, liberals into the state and planting them here to change the outcomes.
You guys, I'm sure, saw that Amazon's coming to our county.
Yeah.
You guys see that? Right, Amazon's coming to our county. That's liberal. That's liberal. That the executives and they'll be liberal. That's the reality.
But I mean, I remember how long ago was it when North Carolina first started voting on the marriage amendments and all of that?
2008.
If Amazon's coming to our county, that's not good.
Right.
I mean, they prey on counties that are. Okay, so there's Harvard Business Journal did a massive review of Amazon, and I know I've written a couple of papers on Amazon when I was working on my master's for business. Amazon goes and specifically targets regions in which the job market is considered almost non-existent for the sole purpose of hiring people at just above a wage that they can't get anywhere else, and then putting such strict work conditions upon them to meet their high demand that basically the people cannot escape because there's nowhere else they can go. And what it does is it dries up any competition that they would have around them, thus solidifying their foothold and stronghold. Then they move into the influence of government in the counties.
You think they did that up there off of I-40?
Yes. Yes. They only do it there. That's why certain European nations won't let them actually have hubs in their nations, especially the Nordic nations who, even though they're socialistic, don't want a company having that much political influence or economic leverage. That's not a good sign as to the economic health of our region, or the way that they perceive the job. people would think, oh, an Amazon cracker here, jobs and everything else, but there's a reason why they're doing that. They know that they have a starving workforce that's ready to work in some really less than favorable conditions, and we'll leave it at that.
As long as they put something on my doorstep, 10 minutes after I order it, I don't care.
Are we going to have drone delivery? Not
perfect. You were saying, Steve, I interrupted John.
No, I was just saying, I remember back in 2008 and the few years after that, how that there were articles on, those that were against the marriage amendment, basically getting folks from liberal states just to move to North Carolina and to
relocate
to change the direction and change the dynamic of North Carolina.
Sure.
And you can see that from over the last 13 years. Sure. They've done it.
Look at the exodus of our good friend Nate, who decided this last election, he was done with it, and he moved back home to what he considers a conservative state. So it's only contributing to the polarization of America, which is not good. That's not a good thing. It's Democrat first, it's Republican first, and American second, and that's an upside down balance from a U.S. a pragmatic nation state perspective. Praise the Lord, we're not concerned about that to a great degree. Praise the Lord that our citizenship is in heaven, and that we understand that this is all under God's sovereign, watchful hand. Because you could lose your mind thinking about what's happening to our nation and who's in charge and the disaster. All of us in this room can remember when we were talking about national debt being $14 trillion, $15 trillion, and how out of control it is. Right? We're doubled that now. We have doubled that. Doubled it. And trillion is that inconceivable number. Jack, remind us about those numbers that you and I did. The listening audience needs to remember this.
So what was it we said?
A million seconds is where we started.
It was 3 months ago, right?
A million seconds was 3 months ago.
Yep. And then we went to a billion.
A billion was 30 years ago. And
a trillion
was 3,000.
No, not 3,000. 30,000.
30,000 years ago.
Okay.
To go from a million to a trillion is your lifetime. So you can really, you can get that. And the senator that did it was the senator from Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And he said, remember 4 months ago or 3.5 months ago? And he gave a reference. And I was listening. Well, yeah, yeah. And he said, that was a million seconds ago. And then he said, remember when Ronald Reagan was in office? Yeah, okay, I do. I remember. That was a billion seconds ago. And then he said,
Neolithic era or something crazy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A period of time that's inconceivable. And that's 1 trillion. That's 1 trillion. And we're at nearly 30 trillion.
We've done 3.5 in one in the time it took to sign a document.
For COVID.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not even, we haven't even done the, there are 2 bills right now on the floor.
The recovery bill, which is what, 5?
The Build Back America, which is the 3.5, and then the infrastructure bill, the hard infrastructure bill, which is 1.2. So together,
5.
They're at 5. And they're in 5? It's an inconceivable number, but again, it's wonderful to get excited about little victories like this and everything, but will it really make a difference?
Depends on how many parents get kicked off their school district.
But, you know, I had a student in AP History today ask me, why hasn't anybody fixed that yet? And we were talking about the Nuremberg conspiracy, where the military officers, because they weren't being paid, almost decided to overtake the Confederate government. I don't mean the South in the Civil War. I mean under the Articles of Confederation before the Constitution was formed, in the very first early stages of the United States. They were not paid, and the central government could not raise taxes at that time. And they couldn't levy taxes.
So they didn't have the power to.
They didn't have the power to. So they had no way of paying these officers. And it took Washington and some other officers stepping in and putting a stop because there were some younger generals that were about to lead a march on Philadelphia.
A coup d'etat.
And then there's Shay's Rebellion, where the farmers were raiding the courthouses to stop the foreclosures and basically the confiscation of their farms by the government because they weren't able to pay their taxes at the lower level that was empowered. And we were looking at it, and I told them, I was like, so you got this weak central government, so we decided to have a more powerful central government in these things that took place. And so we've established from these two things is the government has to have taxes and it has to have money to operate. But it can't prey upon the people and deplete the people out to the point that the people can't survive. And that's the two opposing ideas. Mm-hmm. And I said, in illegal immigration and other things kick in, this is why people are upset, because there's only so much taxes that I can pay. And you said, and we had one student said, well, I think people should get health care and just be taken care of. And I'm like, but who's paying for it? Mm-hmm. And we got through that discussion, and we got to talking about, is a national sales tax a better solution than an income tax? You know, abolish income tax, use a national sales tax. If a guy's here as a tourist, he's helping us. If you're an illegal immigrant, you're still helping us. If you're, yeah, because you're going to buy something.
Yep.
And we were going through that process, and one of the students asked, well, why hasn't our government done that? And I said, because that solution would take away the talking points that keep both parties in power. The ability to get us fighting over who is and who is not raising or lowering taxes to our benefit, but when you look at it, it has such an insignificant impact, because if it was truly impactful, our debt wouldn't be growing, it would be receding.
Right. Yep.
It was a good conversation to have with those students.
What's amazing to me is the group of people who want to talk about the narrative of the climate change not being sustainable don't know that there's an economic climate that's not sustainable either.
Yep.
It's the same exact principles that control the idea that there's just limited resources on the earth, there's limit, you know, they totally get that and are willing to jump up and down at every turn about that, but it's like lost on them. And I think it goes back to the control issue. The idea really is a redistribution of wealth at its core. And, you know, both of them tailing together, they're thinking. Otherwise, their thinking would be illogical.
Yeah. Well, it is illogical, and I'm going to wrap it up because we're out of time. But I was having a great conversation with our church members, and it segues right off what you're talking about, John, which is the climate change. So the reason we're paying higher gas prices now more than ever, now being November of the year 2021, is because of the supply is at an all-time low. And the reason the supply is at an all-time low is because of the environmentalists and the desire to reduce the carbon footprint. So what we're doing right now is we're elevating the earth or the sustainability over the earth over people. That's what we're doing. And the reality is, who does this hurt the most? In other words, who pays the most for the $4 a gallon gas prices? It's not the rich. It's not the middle class. It's the poor. The poor have the least disposable income. So when gas prices double for a poor person, we're describing someone that earns, say, less than $30,000 a year. A family of four who earns less than $30,000 a year. We're going to classify them as the poor. If they have to pay twice as much at the gas pump, that money has to come from somewhere.
It's going to be either less groceries being purchased or quality of groceries.
It has to come from somewhere.
Which is the most, for most families, that's the easiest variable to control because the light bill's not going to change that much.
Nope.
The heating bill's not going to change that much. The water bill's not going to change that much.
So if climate change was a Republican idea and this was NPR, then being concerned about the environment would be racist and would hurt the poor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it would. But right now, we just put our blinders on when we're talking about this. And then we have a totally different conversation, and we say we're talking about the poor and how we want to help them. But we don't understand that the two are related, John, which is what you just were communicating. That this idea of reducing the carbon footprint by minimizing the production of petroleum products, who does it hurt the most? It's not Bill Gates. It's not. You know, they call it to the president's attention as hypocrisy because he had an 85-vehicle motorcade, an 85-vehicle motorcade. Talk about a carbon footprint, 85 SUVs all idling outside while he's in hanging out with the Pope, you know. And
they're not Priuses.
Right, they're not Priuses, that's right. They're not running on natural gas.
They're Chevy Suburbans.
Right, right. And we all know what kind of gas mileage a Chevy Suburban gets or a Cadillac or whatever. So the point of the matter is there are repercussions to these decisions that we make, and it's not as easy as one or the other. And from a Christian perspective, to wrap it up, God made the petroleum for us. That's the truth. God made the crude oil for us. Our job is not to keep America, the earth forever. God has a time when the earth's going to come to an end. And he'll decide that. We don't have to worry about that. Well, thanks for listening to us banter around. We hope that if you have an idea, email one of us. We'd love to get a new article from you out there. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.